Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
By the way, another reminder, if you guys have questions for John, you can text those into 710-710. If we've got time, we'll get to some of those questions. Meanwhile, John, you there?
I'm right here, yes.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure.
Can I start off with this one? I'm sorry, Bob.
You got one that caught your eye already?
Professor, Jim Moore is leaving the show early to go to a country western concert.
God.
Your thoughts?
I want to throw up.
Hey, John, she's a rising star, Lindsay L. You wouldn't go see her?
No. She's country. I hate country.
And we get to meet her.
You get to meet her? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'll let you meet her. But it's like, but the problem is, are you staying for the concert and listening to the music? I mean, maybe meeting her is great and then leave. I thought that'd be a good
thought. We might meet her after she sings. So
you're saying you'd be wearing earplugs, you think, John?
No, I wouldn't be in the building.
But how do you feel about country music, I guess, is what we're all curious about.
I hate it.
Okay.
Yeah, despicable.
What if he were leaving to go see Slayer?
Great, I'd be with him.
You'd be with him? You'd say, take the day off?
Or James Brown?
Oh, well, I mean, it's hard to see James Brown right now. We have to kind of go to a different area, like heaven or something like that.
His energy level's different these
days.
That's not very nice.
Well, he's not with us anymore. It's like, I miss him.
I saw James Brown at the Coliseum.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was
there. What'd you think?
It was entertaining. It was good. McMillan was
there. Was he in the round?
No.
Okay.
No, he was just at the Coliseum. It was good. Meanwhile, let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
John, of all the quarterbacks we're talking about, we haven't talked much about Big Ben Roethlisberger, who I know you're a fan of. He's rehabbing. What are the expectations for him? Is he expected to be back to business as usual? Do they think, based on his age and the injuries over the years, that this most recent injury is going to be one that will compromise him? What's happening?
No, they think
him?
He's going to be fine. In fact, Kevin Colbert had a press conference today. You know, he just resigned as a general manager and talked about Ben. And right now, everything's on path for him to come back. And with that, they think that they can be back to being a playoff team. Because what they did, of course, it got hurt in the Seattle game in week two. Actually, probably got hurt in week one, and it carried over to week two. And so by halftime, his season was over, and they thought their season was over. But Kevin said that. They think he feels better about this team coming off the 8-8 season without Ben, because they have Ben back, than he did the year before when they were 9-6-1. So I think right now expectations are pretty strong for this team.
All right, John. Oh, you know what? I was going to ask you this. You saw the whole, I don't know if you saw the Houston Astros today with their press conference.
It was
pretty pathetic.
Awful.
What do you think the NFL, because here's what I've said. I'm just going to make it an NFL question, but Rob Manfred just seems like he should have been there, gotten the owners together, maybe the managers, and just said, hey, look, man, we got to get away from this thing. Here's how we're going to do it. It just seemed like they were totally unprepared. I feel like Roger Goodell, as much as I complain about him trying to make the game safe, I feel like he would have done a much better job.
And you just said the word safe, so I didn't hear any screaming on that. But overall, no, I think it's a...
we're supposed to hear this, John. Okay, anyway.
No, that's reserved for country music. No, but I have to think that they probably would put the clamps down and have a no-comment type of policy. And I know Dave Grosby has been preaching this really for a little over a week, that there should have been none of this as a press conference, just like a gag order, so you keep it out of the news and you keep it out of the public, because, again, it's bad enough as it is. You notice that even with Spygate and all the different type of gates that we've had with New England, they've kept a pretty low profile as far as commenting and just wait for the results. And I think baseball had no plan as to how to control this, how to limit it, and that's now made it a very messy situation down in Houston, and what's going to be very messy for the rest of the league.
So what do you think when they get the beanballs thrown at them? What do you think the commissioner will do, John? Because I think he'll be pretty harsh with that if that happens.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, what will end up happening is it's probably going to hurt the opposing teams more so than Houston. Because, again, if you're going to be having beanballs and stuff like that, I mean, that's going to go against the pitchers for the other teams and the fights for the other teams. I mean, it's going to be a battle. Certainly Houston's going to be affected, but I think it could cause more damage for the other teams because there's more anger on the other teams. I mean, hey, if you're the Mariners and you had as bad of a record as they've had against the Astros over the last 3 to 4 years, don't you think you'd be a little bit angry? Don't you think he may want to take a couple pitches and throw it at some of these guys?
Yeah, but I think we all assume they didn't need to cheat to beat the M's.
No, that's true, to beat the M's, but how about the Dodgers? And
well, yeah, they've got reason to be upset, certainly. Yeah, the whole thing's ridiculous, the way it's been handled, the way the players have conducted, the owner, it was a complete moron today. It was awful.
It was bad. I agree 100%.
Speaking of which, what is going on in New Orleans? This story hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but there's the Saints and what their involvement with the Archdiocese concerning clergy's sex abuse scandals and this whole thing. What is going on with that?
That one, it's been hard to follow because I can't fully understand it. I mean, I guess they're trying to support what was going on, trying to support the church and all that stuff, and a lot of emails going back and forth. But I never really fully understood what the issue was. And so they've had this big, long apology. I mean, the league's not going to do anything about it. Probably there's nothing for them to do. But no, this was very messy. And, it's one of those things where you see it, and it's like, I don't grasp it. I don't know where to really go with it.
Yeah, I'm just reading a quick paragraph out of it. It says, the AP reported last month victims' lawyers, sexual abuse victims who are obviously suing the Archdiocese, alleged that hundreds of Saints emails show the team executives did behind-the-scenes public relations damage control amid the Archdiocese of New Orleans clergy abuse crisis. So mm-hmm. They were the local clergy there, obviously under fire for terrible things, and the Saints were out there trying to help them with their damage control.
Yeah, and of course, it's kind of weird because it's like, okay, so you have the Saints is certainly one of the most popular things in that area trying to help a church. But, of course, they're helping, I guess, to cover it up and do support. So, the thing is, if you're supporting a church, and I know things were bad at that church and all that stuff, but don't you think that's not necessarily a bad thing?
Well, John, if they're helping, to make this look good and paint this up as something not that bad when you're talking about sexual abuse of children, it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing. I mean, I'm not sure why they'd even want to be associated with it.
Yeah, and apparently they were, and now they're taking the criticism for it. But, it's just a weird story. Sometimes you see some of these stories, and you say, I don't get it. And this is one of those stories I just didn't get.
Hey, John, I've not even asked about this guy just because I have assumed that the Minnesota Vikings are going to lock him up and not let him go. I believe he is going to be a free agent. Everson Griffin. Mm-hmm. Now, too old, you think? I'm looking over the last 6 years, he's averaged 9.5 sacks. He's just a fantastic run player. What do you think?
That was a guy that I know. Right toward the end of training camp, I thought Seattle would try to trade for because I thought that, and they didn't. But I think what ended up happening, he had such a good training camp and then also such a good season that they weren't going to trade him. And so now, he's got a void in his contract that, he could get out of it. But I still think that they want to have him. I mean, had a Pro Bowl season. I know he's making 13 plus million bucks. And, the next contract he's going to have is going to be for much less. So I don't know if he's going to rework his contract and take a pay cut. But, after the horrible 2018 season where, I don't know how you want to phrase it, just had a mental breakdown of sorts, now he's bounced back and really done a great job and was a great player and was a great leader on that team.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that thing. Was that 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was something with his mental health. But, he was ferocious last year.
Oh, he really was. I mean, and the combination of him and Danielle Hunter is sensational. I mean, that's the one thing is that the strength of that team is the front seven on defense. Yeah. I mean, you can say that the receiving core is good, and they have Rudolph at tight end and Kirk Cousins at quarterback. But, boy, that front four is really good, and it's deep. But, again, it's getting a little bit older now.
Mm. John, we have the Greg Olsen decision coming up tomorrow. Do you think if Seattle loses out, it'll be to the broadcasting booth or Buffalo?
I think it would be to maybe Buffalo because you get the feeling, it's like, okay, so he's doing games now, right? He's probably doing a game this weekend, and you can see he wants to play. It's like, okay, I'll make a decision by Friday, and I think that the desire's there to play. Seems like the ability's still there to play, and that's why I think they have a decent chance of getting this thing done.
If he chose to go to Washington, I get that his former head coach is there, but
yeah. I can't see Washington.
Wouldn't that tell you he's not that concerned with winning?
Yes. It would. Yeah, because, again, it's like if you're going to do this, and listen, I don't know if you watched the broadcast or seen him broadcast. He's really good.
Yeah, yeah, he does a good job. He's on the XFL as well. He does a good job.
I mean, he's really sensational at doing this. And so you know he's going to have a good career at that. But if you can squeeze out another year, it's kind of like, oh, it's like I know the guy that tipped this off certainly was Troy Aikman, because he tipped off. He says, you know, you always want to get that one extra year. And I know Dan Marino did it, and John Elway did it, and all these different quarterbacks have done it. But you kind of get the idea. Here's Greg Olsen. He wants to squeeze out one more year, and he's still got the ability to do it. I hope he does it, and I hope he gets the chance to sign on with Seattle.
Okay, John, we were just talking about Dave Brown. We're talking about locker room guys, yeah. And I just remember him getting traded to Green Bay. I guess that was in 1987. It was my rookie year, actually. And I just remember it was a big void. Everybody loved him in Seattle. He'd been there for, 10, 11, 12 years. Dave Brown, is he a Hall of Famer?
Probably not. I mean, he's
62
for Seattle.
Interceptions, John.
Yeah. No,
62!
He's really good. And the thing is, I'm a little bit sensitive on that one because I covered him in two different cities.
Yeah,
I was there. I was there when he was drafted in the first round in Pittsburgh. Rhonda Brown is our neighbor across the street, and she's just sensational. And so, but you're right. But it was funny because you look at the fact that he had those 62 interceptions, and it was at a time that you didn't think there was going to be a lot of interceptions because this was the time that passing wasn't totally in vogue. It was a running defensive league. But I remember going to the Blue Ribbon Committee and then talking about Donnie Shell, who was also in that secondary as a safety, and he was undrafted in 1974 on what now turns out to be 5 Hall of Famers from that class for the Steelers. And he ended up as a safety having 51 interceptions. So it's kind of amazing to think that the talent that Pittsburgh had, because Dave Brown was left to go to the expansion draft because they just had so many good cornerbacks.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking to see 5 touchdowns in his career, 12 fumble recoveries. I mean, this guy was good for almost 70 takeaways in his career. So
same thing for Donnie Shell. Donnie Shell was involved in 19 fumble recoveries. It was 51 interceptions and 19 fumble recoveries.
John, a lot of speculation about the Chargers with Phillip Rivers leaving town, that maybe another quarterback will come in there, Jameis Winston or whoever might be the case. But Anthony Lynn, the coach there, he gave a vote of confidence to Tyrod Taylor. What do you think, John?
Well, and of course, he just got the 1-year extension, so he's now signed Anthony Lynn through 2021. I think what you get the idea, they let Phillip Rivers go. They plan to draft a quarterback, and they're going to have Tyrod Taylor as the running quarterback who's just going to try to get them through this season. So you get the feeling that they might want to trade up to get Tua. That's a possibility. But they're sitting there at the 6th pick in the draft, and I think that they could be content to take Justin Herbert. So I think what you're looking at, and that's why initially most people had them going into their new stadium with the idea that, hey, if Tom Brady's there, they're going to go for Tom Brady. Now, for about 2 weeks, you haven't been picking up that sentiment, and I think what it comes down to, they realize they can draft the quarterback of the future and have Tyrod Taylor running around trying to make plays, because I think you look at the team, and they're not a Super Bowl team, and I think they accept that, but they want to get the young quarterback, and I think Herbert's going to be the one.
Well, I'm torn on Herbert a little bit, John. What kind of career do you think he's going to have?
I think he's going to be pretty good. I mean, and again, it's like you'd love to be able to say he's going to be an elite quarterback, but he's probably not going to be that. But when I was watching him in the Senior Bowl and the Senior Bowl practices, and again, this was on TV, I wasn't there, but it's like when I was watching him, he just kind of reminds me of Kirk Cousins. And that's not a bad thing, because Kirk is a guy that, he can get you to the playoffs. He may struggle to win a playoff game, but he's good enough to be able to do that. So he kind of reminds me on a positive side of maybe being a Kirk Cousins type of quarterback. Now, I know I say that, and Kirk was drafted in the 4th round, but then Russell Wilson that year was drafted in the 3rd round, and both have had pretty good careers.
John, we've talked about Dak Prescott and Cowboys signing him, what's that number going to be, all that good stuff. One guy we haven't talked about is Amari Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're committed to bringing him back? Do you think he ends up elsewhere?
I think so, but I think they also realize it's going to be tough to get him to a contract. Now, a couple things have to play out, and this may work to the benefit of the Cowboys. If they can't get a collective bargaining agreement done here before March, then they have to go with the last year rules in the CBA, and that gives you the ability to do a franchise tag and also use a transition tag. And so what they can do is use the transition tag on him, Amari Cooper. He won't be happy about it. And the franchise tag on Dak Prescott. But, of course, then they have to worry that, okay, is somebody going to try to sign him? And no, I know it's not going to be with a poison pill or anything like that that we saw in the Steve Hutchinson departure. But, you know, I think that they can maybe find a way to make that work.
Hey, John, I was listening to Tom and Stacy and Jake yesterday or 2 days ago talking about Mike Holmgren and the Hall of Fame, been kind of comparing him to Cowher. And so Mike's been three times, won one, right? Lost two, got jobbed in Super Bowl 40. Had to play the guys with the striped shirts. But, you know, what about him? How long till Mike? Because, you know, he comes here as the GM. He turns everything around. Mm-hmm. And then he's just such an offensive, I hate saying genius, because I don't think there are any geniuses, but man, he was good as far as, you know, running an offense. What do you think?
The sentiment in the room for the Blue Ribbon Committee almost had him going in this year. It just turned out to be Cowher. We all kind of knew that Jimmy Johnson was going to get the most of the votes, and which was fine. But I think what it comes down to now, for Mike Holmgren to make it in, you know, Tom Flores needs to make it in. Don Coryell needs to make it in. The board at the Hall of Fame needs to give us the ability to have a coaching category. If there's no coaching category, then it's not going to happen. I mean, like you go for at least another long period of time, but it's time right now. And I know that the Hall of Fame is really in favor of doing that, particularly with the good response that they had, you know, going on the TV with Cowher, going on TV with Jimmy Johnson. And I think they want to have that. And if that's the case, I think it, you know, the push would be to get Mike Holmgren in if there's a coaching category next year.
You bring up Tom Flores, and I just saw this story online that said Flores told ESPN he was, quote, kind of disgusted by the manner in which he was snubbed. He said that David Baker told him, quote, he was almost a shoe-in to make the Hall of Fame when the special 20-man class was announced, and that no one ever called him to tell him he didn't make it. He just learned when Cowher and Johnson were announced as the two new Hall of Fame coaches on TV. He says, it happened. What can I do about it? I don't have a choice. My fans are still my fans, and they're still going to make a lot of noise. A lot of people are really pissed off about this whole thing. A lot of people are pissed off for other guys that didn't make it either. I can't say I'm exclusive in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, it's the matter. We need to get this done so that we can get the you know, coaches category, because, you know, it's, and I'm being a member of the contributing committee, it was a matter, you play catch up, right?
And I think he was yelling at you in particular, John.
Well, I did his presentation. I mean, I was the one who presented.
I think you should have done better. How come he's not in?
I presented Cowher, Coryell, and Flores. And according to David Baker, I did well for all three of them. Did a good job for all three.
How does that work, by the way? Do you have a speech? You stand up in front of the room, everybody's sitting, looking
at stumping.
You. All eyes are on you, and you make a speech on, all right, right now I'm going to talk about Bill Cowher. Now I'm going to talk about Tom Flores.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes, and we got 5 minutes. And so you just make a preparation and all that, and you know, I made the preparation. And the biggest thing I had to present is, like, you got to take Seattle out of the equation here, because Tom Flores should be judged for what he did for the Oakland Raiders. He took them to two Super Bowls. He won two Super Bowls. He did it on a team that it wasn't the easiest thing to be a coach of the Raiders, because, I mean, you had Al Davis looking down at you all the time, and, I mean, he makes it tough on the coach. You had so many characters on that team, but Tom was so good at being able to make it all work. He had a good offensive mind. He had a good presence. The players all respected him, and they all played well in the big games. And so, you know, that was part of the things that I said. And then what I also did is that I went with his record against really good coaches. I mean, 2-1 against Chuck Knoll, 2-1 against a lot of Jimmy Johnson. I mean, he had such a good record against some of the best coaches in football, and he deserved to get in. But again, we had a different room this time, because, you know, we had 13 of the 48 Hall of Fame voters, and then we had, you know, 12 other NFL coaches, executives, people from the league, and all that. So unfortunately, it slipped for Tom. But if we can get the coaches category, I think he's going to make it in within the next 2 or 3 years.
You know why you did a good job, John? Because you're afraid David Baker was going to come over and strangle you and pick you up by your head.
What a large human being
that
he is.
That guy is huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the one thing he said, and I know that Sal Palantonio was sitting right next to me and was going to make a presentation. And one of the things that came up is that, as David said, he's like, now we're getting close to our lunch period right now, and I don't like to be held back from lunch, and I'm a very big guy. And so it's like, you know, Sal, do you want to go ahead and do the presentation? And Sal says, oh, no. Let's wait, and we'll do it right after lunch.
Yeah, we don't want to keep David Baker. I mean, everybody, I think, has seen this guy, and I didn't know who he was for a long time.
Used to be with the Arena League, right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I see
him. And remember,
him,
his son was a former first-round pick of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, we had him on
who
set.
Who was it? Sam. Sam Atkins. I mean, Sam Baker.
Oh, yeah, okay. He sat with us on set at the Super Bowl years ago, and we had those director chairs. You know,
yeah.
Those kind of,
oh, he couldn't sit in that. Could
he came over and started to sit down, and he stood up. He goes, I better not.
Yeah. Oh, he's just a huge guy.
He's,
I mean, it's
massive.
He's just he's got a huge nugget, man. But every time I see him on the sidelines, he's got the biggest smile on his face, mm-hmm. and he always comes up to you and looks at you like, you know, he knows you, and just seems like to be a very nice gentleman.
And I'm so appreciative of him because, I mean, he has been able to listen to some of the things. Like, for example, I guess, you know, people say they might be mad at me for Tom Flores getting in. It's like, no, wait a second. I'm the one who's been pushing the most for the coaching category. I've been thinking of the coaches for so long that, you know, again, Will McDonough was the one who educated me on this, and I always listened to Will because he taught me everything in the room. And so it's like we were trying to get the coaches away from the modern-day players and get their own category. And I think David Baker first, he was able to get the contributors. That worked great. And then we're now working on getting the coaches, and I think that's fantastic. So I'm appreciative that David Baker listens to me and, you know, is following through on some of this stuff.
John, NFL.com rated all the 2019 draft classes postseason, how they did this season. The 49ers were ranked number one. He gave them an A. The Seahawks, a C+, ranked 24th. And the Jets, a D and 32nd. Is that in line with your way of thinking?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, it's like, you know, judging it after 1 year can be tough because, you know, a lot of times the rookies don't do well in that first year. And of course, you saw this year because of the things that were going on with this defense, they didn't want to put too many rookies out there. So when you look at the play time and everything else, you know, a C+, I think, is a respectable grade with the limited amount of time that they had it. But this is a good rookie class. I mean, you can see that they did well on special teams, a lot of the guys, but that's where they played the most. But I think that this class will get a better grade as it gets into year two and year three.
John, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's the professor, John Clayton, on with us every day. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. Coming up, what should the Seahawks wide receiver core look like next year? Now, is Tyler Lockett still the number one? Do they need to add a free agent? We'll get into all of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Is this a show you're going to tonight?
This Lindsay?
No.
No. It doesn't sound like country.
This is the Pretty Reckless.
Oh.
That's the little girl that played Cindy.
Why do we always play your songs for bumper music or whatever you call them?
We've had this talk before, Jim.
Well, I forgot your answer. Must have been a lame answer.
Text it in to 710.
And that was the same response when I told you.
Everybody else remembers.
We should have like a throwback Thursday, you know, have some Ted Nugent or something.
That's on every other show.
What, Nugent is?
The classic rock. Every show basically plays the same bumpers, which is why we wanted to do something different.
Okay. Fair enough.
Know, we played your Skillet.
We'll get Lindsay played before. Lindsay L.
You don't want Lindsay L. I wouldn't be a huge fan of that, but I'm sure she's wonderful.
I can hear channels changing right now.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, David Schoenfeld will join us of ESPN.com. He covers baseball, so we'll get his take on this whole Astros scandal, what he thought of the press conference, the apologies, his take on the Mariners this year, all of that good stuff. But we're talking about the wide receiver core here. First of all, when people refer to Tyler as a slot guy, I don't quite get that. I understand he's a smaller guy, and that's typically the build you see, but he was on the outside the majority of the time. He's your number one receiver.
Yeah.
So he's not a slot guy, per se, in my opinion. Is that how you view him?
Yeah, it's nonsense to to categorize him as any one thing. And, I mean, I think everybody thinks So at least when I played, you usually had three wide receivers, which are not wide receivers, but receivers. You would have starting on you know, the outside, on the tight end side, the Z. Okay. And then the tight end would be the Y, and then the guy on the backside would be the X.
Would you call him a one or a two, or that's you just go by that?
No, just you just identify them, and you know. And Tyler Lockett can't be identified as anything. Yeah, he can play in the slot. I mean, is he like a Doug Baldwin type? Maybe a little bit, but mostly he's a deep threat, and he doesn't look anything like the rest of the deep threats, which are usually 6'2", 6'3", guys like Anquan Boldin that are like linebackers running down the field. It's some of the most ridiculous talent anywhere, I think, in any sport is wide receivers. I mean, you look at a guy like Julio Jones, but look at Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's a little guy, but he gets it done. And what it's about, we talked to Michael Irvin about this a long time ago. And he said, you know, look, you can run routes, have speed, all that. What matters the most is the separation that you get at the very end, at the end of the pass, right? You know, you're trying to, and Tyler Lockett does this really well, that he creates separation at the very end. You know, he'll hold a guy off and then run away. And Russ is great at throwing right on target downfield. So, yeah, but he can run inside X type of slot. You know, slot patterns. He can do that kind
but
of
he
thing.
If you're looking at where he lines up, he's not lining up in the slot. I mean, he does here and there, but for the most part, he's on the outside. So
that's what I remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, I usually don't pay attention because I don't think it really matters that much.
Yeah, and by the way, you're right about it. And I think you and I have talked about his ability. By the time the ball gets to him, it feels like 9 out of 10 times, there's not a defender within 3 to 4 or 5 yards of him. That ability to separate at the end of his route. And I often don't see what it is he does. I'll just sit there and watch him catch the ball and go, how is he that open?
Yeah. Well, he holds him off, you know, and he varies his speed. And that's the one thing that you can do. And used to do that on the other side as a linebacker to guards. You know, if there's an outside play, I just would sometimes kind of slow play it and then at the end take off and he couldn't outrun me. So, you know, I would have the advantage. It's the same thing that he does. He'll run, he'll kind of choke it down a little bit, and then, you know, maybe the guy will be kind of on him, and then at the very end, he speeds away at the end of the route, you know, at the end of the pass. So that's really all that matters, and he's got great hands, obviously.
Yeah.
One of the catches that he had I thought was the most impressive was in Atlanta, where he was running a crossing pattern, and I have no idea how he had the concentration to hold on to the ball because the DB was all over him. So, yeah, he's just had a bunch of really – he has a knack for that. And remember a few years ago when he got the $11 million, I think we all, to be fair, were like, wow, that's a lot of money for him. Looks pretty cheap now.
No, it does. I was definitely in that camp. I thought, man, Tyler Lockett with the injuries he's had. And then you look at his numbers this year, 82 catches for 1,057 yards and 8 touchdowns. So a fantastic season, and then you consider that, what, it was like a 3 or 4 game stretch where he wasn't really himself.
Right, after
that injury
leg
in San Francisco, and Malik Turner came in for him.
Remember, he got sick after that.
He got sick, but yeah, you look at those numbers and you go, man, 82 catches, he still had a fantastic year. The only thing I'd like to see next year, and I thought the same thing this year, but Bob Condotta was writing about special teams this morning in the Seattle Times. Lockett's numbers are down as a returner, punt returning and
couldn't agree
returning.
More. I would assume he doesn't do it anymore.
At this point in his career, you know, okay. Try a younger guy and get someone different.
Well, it's not numbers, safe.
No, I just don't think he's very effective at
his
it.
His numbers are down.
I just and part of that may be, you know, the new rules and everything, but it seems like when he does field a kick that he's returning, they're
you don't really
just
see that explosiveness.
No,
yeah. I mean,
no.
He's still fast, but yeah, something's – and I do, though, Dave, and I know you feel differently about it, but, yeah, I worry about him getting hurt on the kickoff returns especially.
Do you worry about him getting hurt when he runs a route?
No, not as much.
Okay.
Not as much. But, no, you look at what they have. Everybody knows the 1-2 punch they have now with Metcalf, and the main storyline in the offseason is what are they going to do about a third receiver? You know, will it be Disley or will it be another guy? You know it's not going to be Jerron Brown because they're not going to re-sign him.
Or David Moore.
David Moore is still –
maybe
still
it's Ursua.
I'm putting my money on Ursua. And yesterday heard me talk about LJ Collier, that I think he's going to be a contributor, a major contributor in Sextravaganza next year. But look, I have faith. In
season two.
Here's a crazy thing to think. I have faith in Schneider and Pete Carroll, their ability to find the right guys and develop them. That's nutty, right? Isn't that wild? That's
yeah,
a wild
that's a
hot
crazy
take.
Thought.
Yeah, so
you're so wacky.
But Ursua, I loved the few times that we saw him. But again, you know, we talked about this at length, that we couldn't figure out why he wasn't on the field. That's up to Pete and what he sees in practice, and apparently they just didn't see enough. So I'm going to go ahead and trust Pete on that, but I'm still going to go, I wish I'd seen him more, just to be the irrational fan. But, you know, I liked what we saw from him, what briefly in the preseason, and then what he had one catch that was the one down at the 1 yard line or half yard line.
Yeah, the one that Pete was disappointed in, that he didn't get it into the end zone. Which
guy finally gets into the game, catches one of the biggest catches of the season at that particular point because it went for a first down, didn't result in a touchdown, and yet, yeah, you know, good catch, but should have got in there. I'm like, my goodness, Pete.
Yeah, with Ursua, though, do you think it's a little bit of that backup quarterback? Everybody likes the backup quarterback, not here in Seattle, but, I mean, you're always pulling for the backup quarterback, and we saw Ursua in August, but if John Ursua is that good, why didn't he push Turner, Brown, and Moore a little more than he did this year?
That's a great question. I'll always revert back to what Dave says. We don't know what they're seeing in practice. So I'll just assume Pete and John know more about what they should be seeing than any of us could possibly hope to, and they weren't seeing it. Because I agree with you. I look at him and go, why wouldn't you run with that guy ahead of any of those guys who are giving you nothing, who literally were giving you nothing? You don't have a legit third receiver, and Disley's out. Your de facto third receiver became a tight end that you brought over from New England, a guy who you then let go and brought back to the practice squad. And I mean, in all due respect to Hollister, but he became your third option. And that's fine. I don't know if that's how you want it.
Hollister led the team in receiving the last 7 games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they don't have a third receiver, in my opinion. And hopefully Ursua is a guy that can develop into that role. I think people look at him as a Doug Baldwin style guy because he is quick and he runs sharp routes. He's a smaller build, so they just feel like, oh, there's a natural replacement for Doug. We're excited.
Mm-hmm. There's no Doug Baldwin out there.
Doug.
But you can be something like that, and he'll be his own person, his own receiver. But I know that he admired Doug, and yeah, Doug was just the best. I mean, if you know, the receivers, I always talk about how they're drama queens a lot of times because they rely on everybody else mm-hmm. to do, you know, their job in order for them to do get, you know, a pass. But I mean, if Baldwin had gotten the ball thrown to him every time he was open, I'm gonna say he'd have like 100,000 yards right now. Is that too much?
Yeah, it's a little high. By the way, people texting in Gordon ? I'm not counting on him being back. I've got no idea what his punishment
is. I think when he comes back, Seattle would be his favorite place to be.
I would think, and yeah. We asked the professor yesterday, do they retain his rights? And he said no. So he's a free agent. I don't know how many teams are going to be clamoring to bring him in. But in the few catches he had, they all seemed to be on third down. They seemed to be very clutch and looked really easy to him, just regardless of how the ball was thrown. Just the way he caught the ball gave you confidence. So he's a wild card. I would love him back here if he's able to stay on the straight and narrow, but we'll see what happens with that. Meanwhile, apparently being a Browns or Bengals fan is not a medical condition as much as it probably should be. We'll hear more about that when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The State Medical Board of Ohio has rejected a petition filed by multiple fans last December trying to make being a Browns or Bengals fan a qualifying condition for medical marijuana use.
How is that that's an emergency. Not only is it a medical condition, it's an emergency situation. Do you not care about your constituents out there? Do you not care about the well-being?
Is the cradle of football in this country.
You need those people to be on a level playing field. They need to be evened out. It's been a rough go being a fan of either of those franchises.
Give them their weed.
Yeah, if you're going to let them drink beer and consume alcohol.
Yeah, I get a kick out of this guy. It's a Cincinnati resident that came up with the petition, and when the petition asked for letters of support by physicians with knowledge of the disease or condition, the guy replied by saying, there's not a physician in Ohio that will disagree. So everyone's suffering there. in the NFL if you're following the Browns and the Bengals. But, boy, especially the Browns. At least the Bengals, you had a good run with Andy Dalton there for a while.
Yeah, but
frustration because you could never get over the hump.
You got Joe Burrow coming in, though, if you're a Bengals fan.
We were talking about Andy Dalton yesterday, about possibly him getting traded away. Joe Burrow. Now I'm hearing that Tua, I know for Bucky Brooks and the NFL Network, he's kind of gone ahead of Joe Burrow. Yeah, I don't care about either of those guys. I want that kid from Ohio State, Young.
Chase Young.
Oh, he looks like pass rusher.
He looks like
a
wrecking machine. I would love to see a guy in a Seahawks uniform.
I just marveled over how easy he made it look getting to the quarterback. Like, I feel like he wasn't even going top speed.
Didn't it look like that drill I showed you on Twitter earlier today where a guy just chucked that receiver, just threw him to the ground? He looked like he was playing. He was a man amongst boys, is how he looks to me.
If you're the Bengals, you have to take Burrow there, don't you?
Yeah, you need a franchise quarterback as much as that guy is really, really tempting to take. If you've got a conviction about Burrow or any of the quarterback, you got to go with it. That's most important player on the team.
Mars twins are my favorite.
Why are they your favorite?
Because a guy took their mom out to dinner to Applebee's.
75, Ernie.
And they beat the hell out of him.
75.
You're going to take my mom to damn Applebee's.
75. Yeah. That's the 75th time you told that story.
At least 75 times she told that story.
Listen, you get mad because somebody took your mom to Applebee's and you just beat the hell out of him. You're tough. You mad.
The best studio show in all of sports.
Okay, I think I understand.
Baseball, basketball.
I think I understand it now. They took their mother out.
A guy who was dating their mother took their mother out. Their mother out to Applebee's. I had never heard the story. So
the twins,
according to Charles, I don't know if he's exaggerating or what.
Beat
the guy up because apparently that is not good enough for their mother. Seems a little extreme. Assault for taking her to Applebee's.
Applebee's isn't that bad.
My dad's a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I've been to the one at Factoria.
There's a shocker. I know, right? Every year, what do you want for Christmas? Applebee's gift card would be great.
Yeah, they've got a good bar there.
Yeah, so I just like the Shaq's calling him out.
75. That's 75 times he's told that story, Ernie.
Yeah, well, I'd never heard it, so be quiet. let him play it, Shaq.
Shaq's delivery has not changed at all. I remember I had a chance to talk to him in Chicago when I was living in there, and he just dominated Eddie Curry. Remember Eddie Curry?
Yeah.
He dominated. I talked to him after the game about it, and he said something about, somebody asked, do you think he was intimidated? He goes,
probably. I'm a freak. My mom was a freak. My dad's a freak. I'm a freak.
That was his answer.
Shaq was the guy, too, that if you weren't front row in the media scrum, you didn't hear him.
Yeah, really quiet.
I just had no idea what he was saying.
Luke Wilson in motion on the left side. Russell, play fake. Steps back. Has time. Still surveying the field. Now he rolls left. Now he scrambles. Now he's going to throw to the back of the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch. Did he get his feet in? He did! Touchdown, Seahawks! The littlest guy on the field climbed the ladder. Kept his toenails in. And Tyler Lockett put 6 on the board for the Seahawks from 13 yards out.
I hate to say this, but Rabel's the best.
That was a nice call there.
Well, he always does that, man.
Well, the reason we play that quickly, and then we'll go back to you. Tyler Lockett, that catch against the Rams won Nate Burleson's Toe Drag Swag Award.
I like that. I didn't know it was a thing.
I didn't know that either. But
Toe Drag Swag.
Yeah, that was on Good Morning Football.
Yeah. My favorite call of Rabel's of all time was the Fail Mary. When he
Is that
says,
the one where his voice kind of cracks?
Did he make the catch? And he did.
We have that? Yeah, that's
it was kind of like Caddyshack. It's in the hole.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna look that. Yeah, the voice kind of cracked. And he did. It's just a classic call. Yeah, that one, Brian. He's looking for it.
Find it.
Yeah,
Toe Drag Swag. I like that.
It's a good title for an award.
Nate
right?
Burleson's doing a great job, isn't he?
He's a good broadcaster.
What a rising star he is. I guess he's not rising anymore. He already is a star.
He's risen.
Yeah.
He's there.
Did Nate go to Garfield? Is he local?
Went to O'Day.
O'Day.
Okay. And then he played at Nevada, Reno, and I remember I always worked the Cougars into everything. They came and played one of the games in Seattle when Nate Burleson was there at Nevada, Reno.
The Wolfpack?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Ault. Remember Chris Ault?
I do remember Chris Ault.
Yeah. He recruited me out of high school. I mean, he was like a legend.
Not very well.
Nevada, Reno. Well, I don't. He recruited my brother, but he pretty much knew I was going to go follow my brother to Stanford. Did we find it? Did he make the catch? And he did.
We'll find it. Maybe we'll end the show with that one. We'll find it. That's, I know the one you're talking about. That was such a great call.
Can you play it before I leave?
Oh, that's right. Jim's leaving early.
Oh, Jim.
Jim's going to abandon the listeners at 5:30 for a country music show at a bar.
You go ahead, Jim. Have fun.
Happy wife, happy life there, Bobby.
It's odd because you've never really subscribed to that before today.
Usually I'm saying something on the air that I'm hoping she's not listening.
Yeah, usually you go the opposite route. You don't care about happy wife. Just to ask her to stop telling you to do stuff.
Yeah, well, sure. We're having a resurgence in our marriage, okay?
Well, good. I think I found it for you guys.
Oh, did you find it?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
All right.
Wilson takes a snap. Three-man run. Looking, scrambling. Now he's going to roll. Now he's going to stop and set. Back at the 40, lets it fly to the end zone. Going to give his guys a chance. Going up. Coming down. Does he come down with it? Does Golden Tate have it? He's in the end zone. He has. Oh, my God. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks.
So good.
It's in the hole.
That is so good.
I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Oh, I love that call. That is so good. Reeves is the best. All right, there we go. Hey, coming up, David Schoenfeld tells us the one stat that will matter most for the M's this season, and we'll get his thoughts on this whole Astros fiasco that took place today. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.